attractive, beautiful, wonderful people. You're my brother and sister addicts. And I owe my recovery and my life to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. That's why I'm grateful enough to keep giving it away, even when it's not convenient, even when it's not easy, even when it's not simple. Because, well, my life is at stake. It's a funny thing about giving it away. First, they tell us that we can't keep what we have unless we give it away. So you see a lot of people in the parking lots after meetings saying, "Come here, let me talk to you." Getting the newcomers, giving them their phone numbers, but not really knowing what to say. And that's because we have an ulterior motive. We want these newcomers to help us stay clean and help us keep what we have. Gradually, though, we start doing it because we care. And then gradually, we start doing it out of love. Because we love Narcotics Anonymous, and because we love the newcomer, and because it's such a gas to share. There's few things more wonderful than having a message to give away. I don't know about you, but there was a lot of people who didn't want to see my face in my using days. They didn't tell me keep coming back, they told me keep going away. But by some miracle, I've gotten to come up here to Ocean City. See, I came here from Miami, where it's about 82 in the day and 72 at night right now. But I wanted to come to a beach resort where I couldn't go swimming and I couldn't go to the beach and I couldn't wear a bathing suit. I wanted to have that experience, and I've succeeded. So, and I've been to this to two conventions in this region before. I went to the East Coast 91 in College Park. It was a very nice convention. And I went to WICNA in 94 in Baltimore, where they had me speaking on Keep It Simple, which I'll try to do again tonight if I possibly can. I know a lot of you come from D.C. Evidently, more than a lot. I always love what John Kennedy said about D.C. He called Washington a city of southern efficiency and northern charm. You're welcome. Okay. Just last night, I was taking the shuttle bus from the hotel over here. And I sat by the bench, and there was this guy who sat down on the bench. Torn pants and a plastic bag with a 12-pack in his lap. 12-pack of beer. And I didn't know why I was late for the speaker. I didn't get a wake-up call. But apparently, at first it was to talk to this guy, who for no apparent reason asked me where I was going. And I told him I was coming here to the convention center to hear a speaker. And he thought that was a gas. Told him all about Narcotics Anonymous, and he said, "Oh, I tried the program for 4 years once. But didn't work for me. And now I'm taking the bus because they took away my car, DWI. And I told him, "You know, when driving becomes more important to you than drinking, they'll give you back your car." He said, "Yeah, you know, maybe I'll come and see you tomorrow night. If you're here, welcome." The war is over. When I got here, I was ready to hurry up here to hear the evening speaker last night, and there was a guy by the program desk who had about 4 days clean. He seemed to need talking to. So I spent a little time with him. And a little time turned into 45 minutes. I almost didn't hear the speaker, but I bought the tape. But you want to know something? Sometimes it's more important to give a message than to hear one. Sometimes it's more important to give somebody else what they need rather than think that I know what I need. Sometimes God sets up the timing just right so that I'm there. And all I have to do is suit up and show up. And He shows me what to do. This is the sixth time I've had a chance to speak at a convention. And it's a lot of fun. And people wonder if I get nervous. Yeah, sure, a little. But I know that God's here with me. Just like God's here with you. So I don't have to be afraid. As long as we follow this way, you know the rest. And I bring notes because, you know, I learned a long time ago that without notes I can get sidetracked very easily. Because I got Dane Bramage. See? Like many addicts I know, I can talk up a storm. And I can get way off into left field. And it's not because I didn't mean well, and it's not because I didn't mean to finish up where I intended. It's just that I got a story. See, we all got stories. My favorite story for about 5 years there was about the flat tire every week that had me late for work. I had the same flat tire easily 20 times. You know, it's too bad nobody would call me on my stuff then, but... You know, I've been told that levity is more fun than gravity, and we have to lighten up. We have to enjoy our recovery. We have to laugh. And in fact, one of the assignments I give my sponsees is that they need to enjoy stand-up comedy at least 3 times a week, on cable, in person, whatever. They have to laugh. You know why? Because it breaks up crystallization. We get so stuck. Eventually, if we get stuck, we got to either cry or we got to laugh. But you know, laughter is a lot more fun than tears. So I opt for laughter. And I was told that I should offer you the obligatory addict jokes that I sometimes offer. The first one is, what's the difference between an addict and an alcoholic? Some of you know this. They'll both steal your wallet, but the addict will help you look for it for a half hour. Now, how many addicts does it take to change a light bulb? No, two. One to come up with the $10 and the other to promise to be right back with the light bulb. There's another completely different version. How many addicts does it take to change a light bulb? The answer is, what do you mean change? And the last one is, do you know what many addicts use for contraception these days? Their personality. Then there's the addict who says to God, God, what's 1 million years to you? God says, a second. The man says, God, what's $1 million to you? God says, a penny. Man says, God, can I have a penny? God says, sure, in a second. It's funny. In my reading, I do a lot of reading and watching the culture. And I tune into the internet. I meet addicts all the time electronically, which is really cool. I've been on Prodigy for 3 years. I have an electronic home group on Prodigy. And now on the news net called Alt Recovery NA on the internet, I've met dozens of addicts from all around the world. And it's really cool. It's like a meeting in cyberspace. And we get to contact each other and shore up each other's recovery and offer each other suggestions, just like happens in my home group. There's this fellow, Joe B. from the United Kingdom, who's posted a lot. And he said something really wise the other day. He said, in a way, It's not whether we get what we want that matters. It's how we deal with what we get. I like that. It's an awful lot like a saying I've heard around these rooms here, which is success is having what you want. Happiness is wanting what you have. Another addict told me that he uses this prayer. He has this posted up in his bathroom. That's right. Dear David, thanks very much for your offer. But just for today, I will not need your help at running the universe. Love, God. And there's another guy in my home group on Prodigy who said, his name is Ryan R., a wonderful man, lives in Alabama. He said, it is my personal observation that the most common difference between those that get this program and those that don't is the willingness to follow directions. Think about this when you begin to decide that this or that doesn't apply to you. You know, I used to hear people say, take what you want and leave the rest. That may apply to some of the suggestions, but I don't think it applies to the steps. I can't afford to take what I want and leave the rest. This is a package deal. There was also something I came across by Heraclitus. I guess he was an ancient philosopher. He said, those who are awake all live in the same world. Those who are asleep live in their own worlds. Over 2,000 years ago, and he talked about us. I don't know about you, but as a using addict, I was asleep living in my own little world. Now that I'm awake to the prospect of recovery and to the idea of spirituality, I live in a world populated by all of you. We're in it together. And an addict right here at this convention said to me today, the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off. Albert Einstein said, the difference between genius and stupidity is that genius has its limits. Ted Turner said, if I only had a little humility, I'd be perfect. And Lenny Bruce said, last one, every day people are straying away from the church and going back to God. Gee, you know, my story isn't that much different from yours. It's a little different. I mean, the details are different, but the essence is the same. I used until I couldn't stand it anymore, just like you did. I used until I was desperate, just like you did. I used until by some mystery that I can't figure out, my eyes were opened and I was finally willing to say, I'll do anything. I just don't want to feel this way anymore. And that wasn't the end of my self-will. It wasn't the end of my addictive thinking. It certainly wasn't the end of my addiction, which is still alive and well, but it's under wraps. See, I'm still an addict. And that means that, like it or not, I still have to practice principles in all my affairs. Non-addicts, they can do what they like. But if I want my disease of addiction not to torment me, there's certain things I have to do. I was born in Canada, in Montreal, back in 1950. When I was 12 years old, in 62, we moved to Florida. And all through my childhood, I was picked on by the bullies and laughed at by the class. Never felt like I belonged. Always felt like I'd been deposited here from Mars. You know, a lot of my fellow addicts also feel somewhat extraterrestrial. Sometimes well into clean time, I might add. But, you know, I was always looking for something. I didn't know what. I was certainly interested in God. That seemed to be a solution. In fact, I was the chairman of the religious committee of my youth group. I grew up in a Jewish family. Everybody thought I was going to be a rabbi. Nobody thought I was going to grow up to be an addict. Amazingly enough, I've met a lot of people with very similar stories. You know, we have deep spiritual instincts. A friend of mine in Miami named Karen says, we're special people. See, we're not these damaged, terrible people who we think we are. We're really very special people. We have a deep sensitivity. We have a deep desire for ecstasy and for realization. We want to be close to God, and we thought that drugs were a solution. That's what I thought. I thought if I can get high enough, I'll see God. Well, a couple of times it worked, but I couldn't stay there. And I used from 1970 to 1985, 15 years. There's a few addicts I know who got religion after they got clean, and they talk about hell. I don't have to talk about hell. I've been there. Not interested in hell. The top was, at a certain point early in my recovery, the drugs worked just like they did for you. If they never worked, we wouldn't have kept using them. I've even heard addicts say, thank God for the drugs. They kept me from committing suicide. For many of us, this was true. They eased the pain when nothing else would. That's why in NA we have no opinion about drugs. It's an outside issue. We do have an opinion about addiction. I used addictively. I kept trying and trying to get back that high. I kept trying to escape. Kept trying to run away. Never worked. Just didn't work. Worked the first time. But I kept trying to recapture that first time. That was my insanity. And of course I met friends. For the first time I had friends. What do you have? How much do you have? You know, you had those friends. Well, the bottom came in the fall of 84. In the fall of 84, I was in all kinds of trouble. Several times I was fired from my job and had the lights turned out and the phone turned off. And, of course, I had a couple of tickets that I didn't pay, because why pay money for tickets or for food or for other commodities when there's still drugs? So I was driving on a suspended license. At one point, at the very end, I even got arrested for driving on a suspended license. I was never busted for dope, amazingly enough, from beginning to end, even for all the chances I took. I can't explain why. It just wasn't my karma, maybe. But, you know, I'm just so glad that life isn't fair. Addicts have told me, life isn't fair. I'm so lucky life isn't fair. I would never stop going to jail for all the shit I did. See, God gives us a break. We're given an amends process if we need to. We can make amends for the things that we've done. Well, I hit a sufficient bottom. I'm a great believer in a sufficient bottom. After using for 15 years, most of the drugs you used, I don't have to go into details. My life had hit a bitter end. And my parents told me, David, we're going to stop helping you unless you get help. So I went to a meeting and said, I'm doing it myself. Most addicts I know try doing it themselves. But I heard a message. I went to a meeting called Recovery, which met at that time at the University of Miami campus. And Recovery has a very interesting format. Every week they take a step in a tradition, and the speaker speaks on that, and then they break up into little groups, and they have a more intimate discussion. And you know, this unteachable intellectual who thought he knew it all saw a group of addicts who I really believed were staying clean and had what I wanted. They told me, keep coming back. They told me, we'll love you till you can love yourself. They told me, never mind what you think, just show up. You know? And they also told me, don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle happens. I was grateful for that message because I believed it worked for them. I wasn't yet confident that it would work for me. I had to get beat up just a little bit more. And, you know, I tell some of this just to show I qualify. In California, when you speak, they say you're qualifying at 8 o'clock. And I said, for what? But that's just their lingo. There was one time that I was hitting the pipe, and I paralyzed my diaphragm. And I was lying on the floor of my bathroom for like 3 to 5 minutes trying to gasp my breath back. And I said, God, please save my life. And he did. Gradually, I gasped my breath back. And an hour later, I was sucking on the damn pipe again. Now, to you and to most addicts I know, and to me, that means I qualify. I qualify for Narcotics Anonymous because I've been insane behind drugs. I let myself go crazy as a consequence of my addiction. Well, I had my ups and downs. I'm very fortunate that just last week I celebrated 11 years clean. But thank you very much. But I'm here to tell you that the real miracle is the first 30 days. And that's why we applaud so much more loudly for people with their first 30 days than we do for the old-timers picking up the medallions. Because that's the miracle. A friend of mine told the story about how when he had like 60 days clean, this guy came up to him at the edge of the meeting saying, "You think this will work? You think this stuff works?" And he said, "Ah, you shouldn't ask me. You should ask those guys with all those years clean. I just got 60 days. And he said, "Really? How did you get 60 days? And it was then that it hit him. He hadn't had 60 days clean in 25 years. It finally hit him that the miracle had happened. That with the help of this program, he had not used, and he had found a new way of life. This program is not just about coming to meetings and not picking up. It's about, like my medallion says, self, society, service, and God. It's about coming to terms and making peace with all of those four things. It's about making a decision to include all those four things, not just in my prayers, but in my deeds. See, society, yes, I need the society of my fellow addicts to show me what to do and what not to do. Self, I have to be good to myself. And sometimes I have to be strict with myself. Service, I can't live without service. I've got to keep giving it away. And God has to be at the center of my program. Whenever He's not, then I am. And you know what that means. See, I've been prodded a lot in my recovery. Sometimes I haven't had the willingness to change, but one thing or another comes up, and it makes me change. I've been in business. Actually, I'm third generation in the formal wear business. We're in the tuxedo business. It hasn't been that good lately, so don't be too impressed. But something strange happened a few months ago. Back in December, I was riding my bicycle on the University of Miami campus, and I hit a big pothole. Well, hurt my leg. I've got a couple of tears of tendons and ligaments in my knee. So I was laid up for several weeks, and I might still have to have an operation. What scared me about the operation was not so much the cutting, it was the drugs. You know, I didn't want to be put under, and I didn't want to be on any narcotics. And the doctor gave me something like aspirin, which helped the pain. You know, doesn't make me crazy, doesn't stop the bad pain. I mean, stops the bad pain, doesn't stop the good pain that warns me. But what happened is that 15 people, I told this story, they said, "How are you?" "Well, I'm fine from the knee up," I said. 15 different people said, "Oh, I had the surgery, and I got through it fine." It's as though God put 15 different people in my life to tell me, "Don't be afraid. God will be there with you. Things will turn out fine." Last week, six of my seven sponsees threw an 11-year anniversary party for me. I didn't really know how to react. I was kind of excited, kind of shy about it. It was fun watching my sponsees skulk around and lie to me. But it was beautiful, too. I didn't realize that I had done enough to merit such an honor as having a dinner in my honor. And I told each of them, "Stick around, and when you have 11 years, we'll have a dinner for you too. It's the least I can do." So, I don't want to tell a whole long story, My story is that I hit a bottom and I came back with the blessing of Narcotics Anonymous. What really this is about is what we have in common. Yeah, we have the disease in common. The disease takes part of obsession and compulsion and isolation and confusion. Irrational fear. You know, I believe in good fear. I believe in the fear of the edge of the cliff. It's important for me to be afraid of things worth being afraid of. Rational fear has protected my family for the last 3 million years. We don't jump up in front of a tiger and say boo. But irrational fear is the fear of your friends. The fear that other addicts won't like you if you tell them the truth. The fear that somehow you can't come to your home group and be honest. Or you can't tell your sponsor how you really feel. That's irrational fear. I've been told that we're egomaniacs with an inferiority complex. We get arrogance and grandiosity, low self-esteem, terminal uniqueness, denial over control, self-destructiveness, bad attitude. It's a funny thing. Whenever we do the readings, we say, more than anything else, one thing will defeat us in our recovery, and people shout out relationships or they shout out drugs. I've been told that the one thing that will defeat us more than anything is a bad attitude. An attitude of indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles is a bad attitude. And more than anything else, I've got to listen when you're telling me, try God, ennoble your spirit, believe that the spiritual solution will work. The program is about simple tools and complex tools. The simple tools are like keep coming back, call your sponsor, do 90 and 90, and don't pick up whatever happens. The complex tools are the steps. They're the power tools. See, I can't build a house with a screwdriver. I'm going to need a power saw, at least. I can't build a structure of recovery with just keep coming back. I need the steps and traditions to build my house of recovery. That's how it works. There's a principle in every step, but you know what? There's an insanity in every step, too, that leads to the principle. The insanity in my first step was about denial. I wouldn't admit nothing. But you know, if you ever go to the movie theater, they give you a ticket that says, admit one. When I admit who and what I am, it's a funny thing, that's my ticket in. My ticket to recovery is admitting who and what I am and not hiding it anymore from myself. I've been told that hope is the principle of the second step, but it's hopelessness and despair and futility and madness that leads me to need it. I didn't know how crazy I was. See, I thought that just one more hit and I'll feel fine. Self-centeredness is the insanity that leads me to my third step. But I had to have faith. I had to know that God would be there for me when I couldn't be for myself. You know, the problem with working a third step is that I never wanted to make any decisions. In fact, I crossed the county many times to avoid making a decision, and I crossed the country once to avoid making a decision. Sometimes deciding not to decide is a decision. I was introduced to these steps probably 5 years before I actually found recovery. And I had to hit a sufficient bottom. You know, God as we understood him doesn't mean anything mysterious. And people say, how can I understand God? Well, you don't have to comprehend God. A God you can understand is a God you can use. A God you can use is one who's shelter from the storm. A God I can understand is a God I can stand under, like an umbrella of grace. That God will give me what I need, will show me what I have to do. As I move from self-centeredness to God-centeredness, by trusting him with my life and with my will, I find that my life starts to work. And I stop vacillating. I stop pretending that I still have a choice to make. The choice has been made. I'm sticking around for the long haul. My insanity in the fourth step was irrational fear. I was afraid of looking at my life. You know, back when I've been told that an unexamined life is not worth living. Well, the life today that I lead because of these steps and these traditions is worth living. My fifth step is about integrity. It's about putting the pieces back together. Being honest about who I am. We admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. And fifth step doesn't say we took our fourth step to our sponsor and read it to him. It says we admitted the nature of our wrongs. Well, the nature of my wrongs is insanity and self-centeredness. In every case, when I didn't turn to God, when I didn't consider somebody else's feelings, when I thought I had a handle on everything, that was my insanity. That was my wrong. The insanity of the sixth step for me is resistance. And I've resisted recovery. I've resisted spirituality. I've resisted the good directions and the good suggestions of other people until I heard enough. And I said, I'm not resisting anymore. I'm going to try it. I'm willing to try it. I have the willingness, finally, to give up the struggle. Well, what is getting entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character? It means, I won't stand in the way anymore, God. I won't refuse to let this process work. I'm going to let you help me. And sometimes, that's been shown to me by other addicts, by what they've gone through. You know, one of the things that sometimes bothers me is that addicts think you can only learn from your own experience. I've got a bank of experience in all of you. I can learn from your experience if I'm humble enough, if I'm honest enough. My insanity in the seventh step was arrogance. I thought I was a very important addict. Thank God we don't have any very important addicts. We're just addicts. You know, I love it. There's one guy who introduced himself as, I'm really an addict. Or I'm definitely an addict. As opposed to the rest of us, we're just faking it. Or there was a fellow who came to my home group who said, I'm a hard-headed addict. And I wanted to shake him and say, Schmuck, we're all hard-headed addicts. That's why we're here. The soft-headed addicts, they're still out using. The principle of humility helps me overcome arrogance so that I'm not looking down on anybody. One of the best quips I heard about that is that addicts are the only people in the world capable of looking down at others while lying in the gutter. Sure. What it really boils down to is, what am I afraid of? Am I afraid to admit that I'm human? Am I afraid to admit that I'm flawed? Am I afraid to admit that I make mistakes? Well, yes, at first I was terrified. I didn't want anybody to know who I was. These steps gradually convinced me that God was on my side, that I didn't have to be afraid anymore. To me, the insanity in the eighth step was shamelessness and anger and resentment. And I was told to make a list of all the persons I had harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. Which meant I had to become willing to ask somebody else to forgive me. Now, that meant admitting I'd done wrong, more than wrong, that I'd done harm. The harm I had done was primarily the harm of not treating another person as a beloved child of God. Because if I forget that God loves you, I'm apt to use you as though you're a thing. See, I had to remember that God loves me and loves you too. And in the process of working an eighth step, I had to list the people I had harmed and forgive them in my heart for the harm they had done me. Because I knew that would be a barrier before I could really make amends. The real amends I made were not that hard. It took discipline. See, it's easy to do the things you want to do. It's hard to do the things you don't want to do. And I didn't want to walk up to people and say, you know, I did you wrong. I did you harm. And I'm not going to tell you I'm sorry because I'm sorry doesn't work anymore. See, non-addicts learn that after the age of 9, I'm sorry and I promise are not magic words. But I'm an addict. I was still using I'm sorry and I promise when I was 35 years old, as though they were magic words. It's a hard thing to get over. But my insanity in the ninth step was irresponsibility and evasion. I was trying to avoid dealing with the issue. The sanity came with discipline, with doing the right thing for the right reasons. The insanity in the tenth step was perfectionism and inconsistency. We continue to take personal inventory. Well, what's the difference between that and a moral inventory? It's not the same thing. My moral inventory is an inventory of my moral decisions, of all the choices I made that may have been immoral or moral. But my tenth step is about my personal inventory, inventory of my person. What kind of a person do I want to be? Do I want to be the person I always was, or do I want to be the person I always dreamed of being? I do a very simple tenth step with some of new sponsees. I tell them, did you do something good for yourself today? Did you do something good for somebody else today? And did you do something good for your recovery today? If I did those three things, I had a good day. In fact, I had a wonderful day. If all I did was something good for myself today, I had a half-assed day. And just for today, I can give it away. God is there with me, giving me the strength to give it away. I was told that the principle in the 11th step is awareness. We seek through prayer and meditation, and we ask God for the power to carry it out. Awareness and power. The powerlessness that I experienced in the first step is not a good thing. People say I'm powerless, as though that's a good thing. Well, it's a good thing for me to recognize my powerlessness over my addiction, because it has affected my life in many ways. But it's not good to stay powerless. This program gives me power. It gives me God's power, it gives me the power of conscience, and it gives me the power of consciousness. But it isn't automatic. I have to work it. The awareness comes by seeking to know God's will. And the power comes from asking the power to carry it out. So the power that was taken away from me by giving it up in the first step is given back to me on God's terms in the 11th step. That's what we have to look forward to. The problem in the 12th step is selfishness. All my life it was me, 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 I. But enough about me. Tell me what you think about me. The 12th step says three things: that we've had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. That's like the closest thing we have to a guarantee. If you've worked these steps assiduously, to the best of your ability, you've had an awakening of the spirit. Now, this means to me that I'm no longer thinking like an ego. The ego, like the mind, is a good servant but a bad master. So instead of being ego-centered, if I'm spiritually awake, I'm God-centered. I'm thinking, what does God want me to do? And we tried to carry the message to addicts. We carry the message, we can't carry the addict. I'm not responsible for what you do with the message. I can't afford to be codependent anymore and carry you and say, and spoon-feed you. But I try to practice these principles in all my affairs, which means no, recovery doesn't stop at the door. My sponsor used to have a joke. He said, God I'll trust you with all the other stuff, but I'll take care of the important stuff like sex and money. Well, yeah, it works for a while, till we can't stand it anymore. And then we give that up too. One of my sponsees is a romance addict. He doesn't want to just fall in love. He wants to be head over heels in love. He wants to be falling off the high dive board, plunging into a sea of romantic ecstasy. See, the problem is that the disease doesn't sleep. Guy used to come to my home group and said the disease was up a half hour before me and had coffee made. Unfortunately, it started getting up an hour before him because he stopped showing up. It wasn't emphasized to him how important working these steps were, or how we could use the traditions as a way of dealing with reality as well. See, the steps keep me from committing suicide, and the traditions keep me from committing homicide. I had to learn how to deal with people, how to practice principles like unity and mutual respect and belonging and right desire and purpose and compassion. I won't go into all the traditions now because, frankly, you need to work them with your sponsor. And if your sponsor isn't helping you work the traditions, prod him a little, or her. It's half of our program. It's how it works. I just want to talk about some NA misconceptions a little. People told me, fake it till you make it. Didn't sound right to me. I've been faking things my whole life. Then I found out where that really came from. They said, act as if you had faith and faith will be given unto you. That made a lot more sense. Act as if you're a faith-based person. Act as though God is already working in your life and miracles happen. Then there's addicts who tell me the 12th tradition means you can say that you were here, but you can't say I was here. That's probably a good definition of anonymity, but not of the 12th tradition. 12th tradition tells me that what's important is the message, not the messenger. And it tells me that sometimes out of the mouths of babes can come some profound truths. That I've heard some of the most important things I needed to learn about recovery from people with under 90 days clean. It was right up in their face. Addiction was fresh in their mind, and they couldn't afford to be kidding themselves. Then there's addicts who tell me, who am I to judge? Well, I'm given this divine faculty called judgment, and I'm expected to use it from moment to moment. What I'm not allowed to do is condemn. I can't point a bony finger of condemnation at you and say, how dare you? God is offended. I don't know what your path is, and I don't know what your relationship to God is. But I can make some judgments. If you're hurting people, if you're avoiding practicing principles when it's inconvenient, and I notice, I'd be foolish not to make a judgment of that behavior. But I can't judge you as a person. I have to love you anyway. Addicts... Thank you. Addicts told me, if my sponsor told me to stand on my head and wiggle my ears, I'd do it. I told them if I had a sponsor like that, I'd find another sponsor. Addicts said, when I got here, I knew everything. Now I know nothing. Well, that's kind of extremists. You better know something if you've been paying any attention. Some addicts told me I didn't do nothing. God did everything. Well, he had your help. At the very least, he had your cooperation. This program doesn't work unless we work it. God doesn't do everything. We must participate in our own recovery. Then addicts told me, you gotta hit your knees. I thought this was the NA dance. Hit your bottom, hit your knees, hit your bottom, hit your knees. I'm sorry. We have to make fun sometimes. Hitting my knees is a spiritual posture rather than a physical one. when I'm harmless, when I'm humble, when I'm not arrogant and waggling my finger saying, God, you didn't live up to my agreement with you. When I'm saying, whatever you want, you know, I work for God today. And the hours are good. The pay is lousy, but the benefits are terrific. See, and we all work for God. We just haven't all found that out yet. I heard addicts say, pray every morning and pray every night. What are you doing in the middle? I believe in reflexive prayer. This means that you can pray at any time. You don't need a clue. You don't need a cue, I mean. Yeah, we all need a clue. There's no time that God isn't on the line. See, God has this 800 number that works anywhere you go. The cool thing is, I can tune in anytime I want. When things are going good, when things are going bad, when things aren't going at all. And God will restore me to sanity in a heartbeat if I'm willing to let Him. I think the problem is we like our insanity so much. We're so used to it. I've heard addicts tell me that pain is the main motivator, that they don't do anything to change unless they're in enough pain. Well, work the steps. You'll find that there's other motivators. You'll find that hope is a motivator and faith is a motivator. And that love is a great motivator. In time, we get motivated by beautiful things instead of ugly things. And that keeps us clean and that keeps us coming back. And I heard addicts say, I didn't come here to be a saint. Well, okay, none of us came here to be a saint, but I've seen some addicts in recovery become pretty saintly. And what's a saint anyway? But a person in whose life God is acting and working every day? A person who experiences miracles? A person who overcomes destitution and desperation? And who's living in a spiritual reality? Well, I see saints all the time in NA. An addict told me, if your ass falls off, put a sling around it and take it to a meeting. And it sounds nice, but I would tell you, if your ass falls off, put a sling around it and take it to a doctor. Meetings are not the cure for everything. I wish they were. Then addicts told me, trust your feelings, not your thinking. Well, I had a sponsee who was a romance addict. And he asked me one day, why can't I just do what's in my heart? And I said, because we have heart disease. Our feelings are not necessarily a better gauge than our thinking. But you know what? Two addicts are probably not going to be wrong. And three addicts even better. If I'm in doubt, I run it past a sponsor or a sponsee or someone I trust. I don't try to make my major life decisions alone. Then there's addicts who told me a drug is a drug is a drug. This gets me mad. People, we have no business telling someone on insulin to stop taking insulin. We have no business to interfere with the doctor-patient relationship. Very few of the people in this room are medical experts. In fact, you know, I was using anesthesia on myself for many years. I'm not a very competent auto-anesthesiologist. And not many of you are either. So, rather than just say a drug is a drug, let's just say I can't afford to take any mood and mind-altering drugs without considering the consequences. As far as smoking and coffee, let's not be so hard on ourselves. You know what? The people in the old fellowship said nobody ever went to jail for drinking too much coffee. It's a test of unmanageability. You know, I managed to stop smoking 5 years ago. I'm very grateful. But you know what? I'm equally grateful I'm equally grateful that in the first 5 years of my recovery, nobody ever kicked me out of a meeting for smoking. I hear addicts say, I surrendered to my addiction. No, that's what I did every day I used. I surrender to my recovery, or at least I try. Another misconception is that the meeting is over when the speaker ends. You know, I was in a bunch of workshops here, and it's amazing how many people don't know that they missed half the meeting. An awful lot of good stuff comes up when people from the audience share. You know, it's not all about being entertained, it's about participating. It's a program of ego deflation, not ego annihilation. See, God intends for me to have an ego, just like He intends for me to have a body. If I had no ego, I couldn't get up here and share with you. What I need is not no ego, is what I need is a healthy ego. One that isn't trying to impress everybody, or trying to be Mr. Know-It-All, or trying to be Mr. Cool, or trying to be anything. My ego is simply a vehicle with which I can communicate with you, just like my body is a vehicle with which I can move around the earth. What I ask God is not take away my ego, but help me have a healthy one. Help me like myself and be good to myself and enjoy my own company. See, one of the things that I've heard addicts say is that an addict alone is in bad company. I don't believe that. An addict alone with his own disease, he's in bad company. There's some simple mistakes that we can make in recovery too, like passing the basket in the dark. Please, if you have a candlelight meeting, turn on the lights when you pass the basket. Don't lead us not into temptation. Just like I don't ask the newcomer to hold my wallet when I go swimming. It's putting him under too much pressure. You know. But aren't we supposed to trust everybody? Trust your sponsor. Love the addict. Another common mistake is putting the tapes in the registration packet with the refrigerator magnets. I can't tell you how many people come home from the convention with bum tapes because they exposed it to a magnet and didn't even think twice about it. Another mistake we make is hanging with the homies. Hanging with the people we used with. Why is this a major boo-boo? Oh, the joint keeps coming around, or the bottle keeps coming around, or the pipe keeps coming around, and you keep passing it on and passing it on and passing it on, saying, I can handle it. Until eventually you get so mad and say, give me that. One of the commonest misconceptions is that we're powerless over people, places, and things. I'm actually pretty influential. I've influenced people, places, and things, but I'm powerless over those people, places, and things that are triggers to my disease of addiction. See, I can't subject myself to that kind of pressure. Another mistake we make is better anyone as a GSR than no one. It's not true. Sometimes nobody is a better GSR than somebody who's really unqualified, or who will run his will, or who will make it his little princedom. Another big mistake we can make is, well, maybe I can still deal. Hey, I got all the connections. I know everybody. Maybe I can stay clean and still deal. Boy, is that crazy. Because if it's poison to me, it's poison to you. And what right do I have to poison anyone else? It'll make you crazy. For that matter, the mistake we often make is nobody will ever notice if I... You fill in the blanks. I'll know and God will know. That's all who needs to know to make me crazy. And another mistake we make is go ahead and edit the book. The addicts will never notice. No, I'm not going to get political. There are NA indispensables. There are indispensables we have. One is staying clean. That one's obvious. But it's also indispensable to give it away. That includes everyone. We have to give it away to everyone who needs it. There are some people we sometimes leave out. You know, we've gotten pretty good at sharing with, regardless of sex or regardless of race. But what about elderly? Do some people come to our meetings who are older and think we're a bunch of kids and that they're not made to feel welcome? Do some of us look at an older person coming to our meetings and say, oh, they're somebody's grandmother? Maybe they're an addict who needs help. Sometimes we're inconsiderate of religious minorities. You know, there's some people who may be Buddhist or who may be Hindu or Muslim or other minorities, and we may be inconsiderate by spouting our particular religious views. Let me put it this way. No addict seeking recovery need ever die. And if you feel very strongly about your religious beliefs, share it with them after the meeting. There was a guy who used to come to one of my home groups in Miami, who his name was Bob, and he was a nice guy, but he always had to share about how much he loved Jesus. And my sponsor took him aside one day and said, Bob, I love Jesus too. Jesus is a friend of mine, but don't tell me about Jesus, tell me about Bob. And Bob said, humana, 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 humana. Because he hadn't thought about Bob. And that's what we're here for, to share our hearts with each other. Another indispensable or must, you know, they used to say there are no musts in NA, but I think this is a must, spiritualization. We have to spiritualize our lives, include God in with everything. Make God a part of your plans. You know, when I help sponsees through the third step, I ask them, you know, list your major decisions and say, was God consulted? Usually, if God wasn't consulted, it didn't work. It's funny about that. One of the things that we practice here is spiritual evocation. We draw each other out. You know, that's another problem with the saying, only share your experience. Sometimes I share things I didn't know I knew. Sometimes you do too. Another addict can ask me a question, and I won't know that I knew the answer, but suddenly I do. And it's because Spirit can speak through us, if we're willing to let it. You know, let your friends evoke you. Let your friends call the Spirit out. Can David come out and play? Yeah, sometimes the Spirit can be called out. Another indispensable is the Eightfold Program. You know, this guy used to come to my home group, and he said that he had learned that this was an Eightfold Program, just like an Oriental religion uses eight principles. We have eight principles. Meetings, steps, sponsorship, fellowship, prayer and meditation, reading and writing, telephone, calling addicts, and service. If all we do is go to meetings, we have availed ourselves of exactly 1/8 of what this program has to offer. If you have an eightfold program, your program will be so rich you won't know what to do with it all. Another must is a loving and understanding heart. Really caring about other people. And not just faking it or putting on airs or giving people hugs but not really meaning it. But if you don't think you have an understanding heart, ask God for one. And while we're at it, don't be afraid to thank and praise one another. If somebody helped you and opened your eyes and opened your heart, thank them. You know, praise them a little. Let them know you appreciate it, that their program worked for you and that you learned something. Another must is forgiveness. I've been wronged many times in NA. A lot of addicts have brought very bad addict behavior into their recovery and weren't even aware of it. If I held that against them, I'd have a stone in my heart for the rest of my recovery, and I can't afford to have that. I have to let it go. I have to let them be who they are. And at the same time, be compassionate for the fact that their relationship with God may not be perfect. So it's okay, neither is mine. Another must for us is fascination with life. You know, loving life so much that we're intrigued by everything we experience. It's so easy to get jaded, to get cynical, and to say, ah, I heard it before, been there, done that. Well, life is really interesting when you get down to it. All aspects of life, not just recovery. I watch the news, I read the paper, I read books. I'm interested in science, medicine, all kinds of stuff. You know, we were curious as kids, and something happened. Restored to innocence. If I say nothing else, you know, a lot of addicts will dismiss what I have to say because they think, oh, he's too intellectual. That's what they used to say to me when I had 3 months clean. Oh, it's all in your head. Well, I feel as deeply as anyone. Let us not dismiss our gifted members. Let us cultivate them. Let us help them open their hearts. So one teacher taught me, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven. And he also taught me, the kingdom of heaven is within you. Well, you know what that means to me is, to reach the place where you meet God, you have to go inside. God isn't going to be out there in the sky somewhere. God isn't even going to be in the meetings unless I bring him there with me. If I come to the meeting without God in my heart, I won't see him there. Maybe the universe, like ourselves, is still growing up. We live in an imperfect world. Addicts are very self-centered. You know, I used to say, why me, God? Why is this all happening to me? That's pretty self-centered. But the reality is, it's an imperfect universe. Shit happens. You know, recovery and maturity is dealing with the fact that shit happens, not being mad that shit happens. We're building a new model of spirituality here. See, recovery from addiction is a perfect model for recovery from destructive desires and cravings and isolation and insanity and denial and moral paralysis. We're learning what it means to be intimate with God, something that very few religions have ever dealt with. To me, spiritual, not religious, isn't an exclusive thing, it's an inclusive thing. It's something better. It's something I can carry to my everyday life rather than practice one day a week. Two of my sponsees this week taught me something that I didn't know I knew. Stuff was happening in their lives that they were all perturbed about. And I told them, when things go your way, say thank you. When things don't go your way, say thank you. And they had a hard time understanding what the heck I meant. I said, maybe God was moving you in such a way that what you wanted wasn't for your best good, wasn't for your highest good. And maybe when things didn't work your way, it's because God had something even better planned for you. So when things don't go your way, say thank you. Just as there is many a yet for my addiction, there's also many a yet for my recovery. I haven't seen it all. I haven't done it all. There's a lot for me to learn. I promise to keep coming back because you keep teaching me stuff. But one of the things you've taught me is not to look for outside fixes. Becoming a productive and responsible member of society doesn't mean that I'm forced to buy into all of society's myths. Society still says that the right car will get you laid, the right house will get you status, and the right job will get you respect. Well, NA says that developing the right relationship with ourselves, society, and God will make us happy, joyous, and free. And they had a hard time understanding what the heck I meant. I said, maybe God was moving you in such a way that what you wanted wasn't for your best good, wasn't for your highest good. Well, get me those things. I don't know. But let me look for the right thing first. I believe also that we're here for three basic reasons. To have fun and enjoy life. You know, to party together a little. To learn and to grow. And to share and to love. All of our other activity either supports those three goals or it detracts from them. Life is good. My heart is full of love. I'm a little stronger today than I was yesterday, and I'll be a little stronger yet tomorrow. My mind and my heart are open to beauty and joy. I am part of the world. My life has purpose. I seek in life an understanding heart. Deep inside, I am the person I always dreamed of becoming. Gradually, I'm becoming the person I always wanted to be. I want the best for others and myself, and I'm willing to work for it. Every day my past has less and less influence on my life, and I have more and more hope. I'm learning to like, accept, and respect me. These were affirmations I wrote for some sponsees back in 1989. You know what? We have affirmations that we read every day. It's called Just for Today. I will have a program. God supports me and helps me in all things if I include Him in my plans. And just for today, I'm grateful to be an addict in recovery. Even when I don't understand why things are happening the way they are, I have faith and acceptance that God is preparing an experience that will work for my highest good. I don't have to understand everything. My mind and my heart are open to beauty and joy. These evoke a lot from me. And they evoked a prayer from me which went, Dear God, please help me to be more resistant to my disease and less resistant to my recovery. Please grant me more faith whenever I'm lost in doubt. Please help me remember that I can get through today okay with your help, because I've been through much worse in the past than I've survived. Please help me laugh when I'm sad, forgive when I'm angry, relax when I'm uptight, take courage when I'm afraid, achieve balance when I'm driven, and find peace when I'm in conflict. Please remind me that I can heal my pain with love and laughter. Please help me see the challenges of the unknown that I must face as exciting experiences rather than dreadful ordeals. Please show me how to take my life seriously while not taking my ego so seriously. Please show me how to balance a busy life with enough time set aside just for me to spend with you. And please help me be responsible without being stodgy, and joyous without being manic, and sensitive without being melodramatic, and righteous without being self-righteous, and self-respecting without being stuck up, and gentle without being weak. And please help me to resolve all these apparent conflicts of opposites, to dissolve my negative patterns with positive principles, and to shine out in the darkness without being discouraged. And please help me always remember that you are always with me, and help me be ever more sure of my place in the universe. And thanks, God. We have a deep common vision. I envision the day when there's as many addicts in recovery as there are on the street. I envision a day when each of us holds his head up high when he says he's an addict. I envision a time when we can practice a simple, practical path of spirituality. Just as a gym has simple exercises to grow strong physically, we will develop exercises to grow strong spiritually. See, the newcomer may be crazy. Love him anyway. The newcomer may not smell so great. Help him anyway. The newcomer may never come back. Spend time with him anyway. The old timer may look successful and secure and serene. He needs your love anyway. The old timer may know the program backwards. Share your wisdom with him anyway. The old timer may look like he belongs. Tell him, welcome, keep coming back anyway. Every addict from every background has a right to be here, has a right to be made to feel welcome, has a right to feel at home and at ease here, and has to have our unqualified love and support. When that happens, the base of our program grows, and the height of our freedom is higher. And as long as we follow this way, we have nothing to fear. Thanks very much for letting me share.